From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 325, recorded live Thursday, June 21st, 2012. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at telerik.com. And by franklins.net, training developers to work smarter. And now offering Gesture Pack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Damian Edwards about the latest updates to ASP.NET 4.5.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today on the show, I've got Damian Edwards. How's it going, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. You have been all over the world. You just got back from Europe, or where did you get back from?
I was in Oslo for NDC, the Norwegian Developers Conference, for a week, and then I flew direct from there via London to Orlando for TechEd US.
And what did you present on?
So in Norway, I presented on ASP.NET 4.5, what's in the box, and then Signaler. And I also did a NDC cage match with Signaler, with Rob Connery and John Galloway, where we did Signaler versus Socket.io, which was a lot of fun. And then in Orlando, I presented on ASP.NET loves HTML5, ASP.NET, or it's mobile and tablet development for ASP.NET, and then again on Signaler.
Wow, that's a lot of presenting. Who would have signed you up for so many presentations?
I cannot possibly imagine who would have told me I had to do those presentations.
Yeah, I appreciated you doing those, though.
Yeah. I mean, I to be totally honest, I generally don't like doing talks that I didn't write myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But those two talks I did at TechEd went over really well, and they actually scored amazingly. I had 880 people at the HTML5 talk, which blew me away.
Right.
And then the mobile talk said I had 1,300 people, mm-hmm. but I think the room only sat 650. So I don't know where the other 700-odd people were, unless there was an overflow room. But I'll take it.
Right. And those are talks that the mobile one I've done before, and Steve Sanderson did those demos. Did you?
Yeah.
And I know that I know what you're saying. Like, I don't like doing talks that someone else wrote either, except if that's Steve Sanderson.
Yeah, well, if someone else has done the hard work and make you look good, then I can't really complain, can I?
Yeah, so. Exactly. Well, I just got back from the Phoenix Day of the Goo. Scott Goo has been going down to Phoenix for the last 7 or 8 years, and they've expanded it to anyone named Scott.
Oh, nice. So Scott Brady Gaster.
Yeah, Brady Gaster was there. And anyone else who chooses to change their name. Awesome. To be a part of the event. So that was cool. And we did 1,000 or 1,200 people in a big art house, and it was cool. And I know some people think that we're out there kind of beating the drum and trying to get the word out. That's one way to do it. But I think they forget that, you know, when 50,000 people read your blog every day, 1,000 people in person, that's not the best way to get the word out. But it's the conversations afterwards. That's what's useful. It's not just the talks.
Yeah,
It's the showing them new stuff. Really new stuff, which we now, and actually for the last few years, have been allowed to do daily builds, and then finding out what they really think about it. I've been actually segmenting my talks up a little bit lately, by developer. So I'll go, by developer of the technology. So I'll go and say, you know, here's what Mads Christensen's been working on. And then I'll have daily builds of stuff that Mads will have given me the day before.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then show them that and see what they think.
Yeah, for sure.
I showed your OpenAuth stuff.
Yes.
Maybe you could talk about that, because people went bananas for that.
Yeah, so with Visual Studio 2012 and .NET 4.5, we shipped support for logging into your website via OpenID or OAuth in the web pages templates, I think right back in the first beta. And since then, obviously, we've always planned to have the support in not just web pages, but in MVC and web forms as well. But it kept sort of getting pushed back. And so I'm glad to say that it is going to be in the RTM release. And I was lucky enough to actually do the development work for making the web forms, you know, version of this work. So come RTM of VS 2012, when you say file new project, you'll be able to, by default in your website, very easily add support for logging in via Google or Facebook or mm-hmm. Microsoft account or, you know, whatever it is it might be, to any of those project types, which will be great.
When I was showing that a couple of the days ago, one of the things that I think is deceptively complex about it, and as someone who has implemented OpenID, if I remember correctly, I did it in with Open .NET OpenID in 2006 or 2007 with DOSBlog, and then I used OpenAuth to add Twitter logins and stuff to Nerd Dinner a couple years ago. So it hasn't been super hard, except, and this is where the deceptively complex part comes in, think about it in the context of a real-world membership system, right?
Yes.
You're logging in as a an external subscription first, and you have no local subscription, and then you what if you log in as a internal subscription, an internal authorization, like I'm S. Hanselman, let's say, on Nerd Dinner, and then I associate external. There's a lot of permutations there. What if I remove some? I mean, how many different scenarios are there that we have to handle and make it all still work with membership?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, we wanted to go beyond just doing the easiest thing, which is let me log in with Twitter. Because as you rightly point out, we have an existing membership system in ASP.NET, which a lot of people use. We have sort of this simple membership system, which is kind of an augmented version of that, which is used in web pages and the new version of MVC. So what does it mean to add external authentication? So as you said, I can come to the site having never been to the site before. I can then choose to log in via Twitter or Facebook, and now I have some record on this website saying that I can log in via Twitter, but I don't have a password for this website. But I could also be an existing user that has a standard username and password, and then I want to associate an existing external credential, like my Facebook account, with that local credential so that I can log in with either. And then at some point in the future, I may want to remove my Facebook association, just leaving the ability to log in with username and password. So we added all of those scenarios so that you can either be an existing user that adds Twitter, you can be just a Twitter user that then adds a local password, you can add more than one external credential, so you could have two Twitter accounts linked to a local user or a Twitter and a Facebook account linked to a local user. We protect against you deleting your last way to log in.
That one was an interesting one. Right. So you have a bunch of externals and you start removing, oh, I don't use Twitter anymore. Oh, I don't Facebook anymore.
Right.
Oh, but I have no other way to log into this site.
So right.
That was really clever.
Yeah. So, I mean, especially when you think about the web, again, the naive thing to do with there is just like when we render the page, check if this is the only, check if they have a local password. And if they don't, check how many external credentials they've got registered. And if it's more than one, show the delete button. But of course, this is the web and things are asynchronous and happen at the same time, and there are often delays. And so you can, you know, easily envisage a scenario where I have two tabs open and I've rendered sort of the manage account page in both without realizing it, and I delete one account from one page and then I forget. And then, you know, 50 minutes later, I come back to the other tab and I go, oh yeah, I was going to delete this one, and I delete the other one because that page is still showing that I have two accounts, even though I'd previously deleted one of them. And then I delete the other account, and now I have no way to log in. So we actually had to do that in such a way that it's protected via a transaction in the database, so that no matter how you get to the point where you want to delete an account, we absolutely fundamentally prevent you from deleting your last way to log in, because it's actually a serialized transaction in the database.
Now, this is something that sits on top of membership. And a guy that I was talking to, and this is the kind of cool information and feedback that we get when we talk to people in person, is he says, well, I have membership now. I have an existing membership system that really works fine. The database is there. It's full. We're doing a lot of cool stuff with it. What's going to happen here? I'm going to upgrade to 4.5. And how am I going to add whatever needs to be added to my database? Is there a conversion process?
So what we did as I said, web forms is a little bit different. So web pages and MVC both use this thing called simple membership, which sort of sits on top of membership, but it also ignores a big part of the membership APIs because it's an attempt to sort of redefine how membership in ASP.NET works. But if you have an existing membership system that's using an ASP.NET membership provider or a custom provider you wrote, the way we implemented it in web forms is we have a sort of a package. It's called microsoft.aspnet.membership.openauth, which allows you to add OpenAuth support to any ASP.NET site that is using the ASP.NET membership system. And then what it does is under the covers, it takes a dependency on .NET OpenAuth, which is an open source, set of NuGet packages for doing OpenAuth and ASP.NET or .NET in general. And it takes a dependency on Entity Framework, and it'll create for you automatically using EF Code First those mapping tables that are required to map a local ASP.NET membership user to one or more external accounts. And so if you had an existing site, first you would need to, the easiest thing to do would be to create a completely new site. I'm not suggesting you delete your old one. What I'm saying is create a new one in Visual Studio. Use that to get the assets that you want for your existing site, because there are some new pages in there like manage account. There's a user control that you can add that gives you the buttons, log in with Twitter, log in with Facebook, that type of stuff. Mm. Grab those assets out of there, copy them into your site, and then just via NuGet, you can NuGet in this sort of shim package that will then pull in .NET OpenAuth for you. Then you can, now that you have all those assets in your project, you can hook them up, because there's code in those pages as well that does all of the hookup to those packages and to those APIs.
Mm-hmm. And what do you need is an additional table? And an additional column that hooks that in?
Yeah, so the way that the membership one works is that it doesn't affect the membership tables themselves. It adds an extra set of mapping tables, which it creates for you automatically using EF, but there are properties on those APIs so that you can change the table name and those type of things. So it's fairly customizable. Everything's also behind interfaces, so that if you don't want to use sort of the easiest set of we have like a multi-level API. I'm a big fan of these API designs where you have a fully customizable behind an interface supports dependency injection and unit testing sort of API level. And then you have the really brain dead, just give me a static class with a bunch of methods on it that calls into that level. And so the templates by default use the static type that has all of the easy methods. But if you wanted to not use that and instead go to the direct, fully unit testable, fully dependence and dependency injection sort of supported level, you could do that as well. And again, it's all customizable. You can set the properties. You can set the connection string. By default, it'll look at the connection string for the configure provider. It has a default table name, etc. But you can change those things.
So if we use web pages or MVC or web forms, everyone will have the option to use OpenAuth to log into their system.
Yeah, absolutely. They basically all have feature parity. Now, the other thing I wanted to point at why it's sort of more complex than it may at first seem is that you're talking about letting people log into your website and letting them create accounts on your website. So that's a serious, serious security thing that you're talking about here. And we did a lot of work to ensure that we plug up all of the holes that we could identify that could potentially let people do nefarious things with your authentication system. Mm. Some of the really common things are things like cross-site request forgery or phishing attacks, where I craft a special link that I then get someone else to click. Now, this may be someone that I know has an account on your website, or I suspect they do, or they might not even. And then when they click that link, I can craft a post to this website and potentially log that person either in as me and then convince them to enter sensitive information about themselves into my account so that now I can see their sensitive information. Mm-hmm. Or perhaps I convince them to click a link that associates my Facebook account with their local account. So now I can log in as them using my Facebook account. Those are the type of things that we had to protect against. Now, web pages and MVC has a built-in cross-site request forgery protection mechanism, which mm-hmm. this stuff utilizes. For web forms, what we did is we, in the master page in the new project template, we added cross-site request forgery support to the master page. And so that all the pages in the template get the sort of protection such that they can't be posted to from another site.
Is that something we would want to put in web forms baked in?
It would be. I mean, again, unfortunately, this was something that we realized sort of too late. And when we were building the feature, we were like, wow, we really need this support. It's too late to put it in the runtime, but let's put it in the template to show people, well, A, to secure the template, and B, show people how they can do this using the existing features that are in web forms. So we actually utilize features like view state encryption and view state user keys mm-hmm. To ensure that we can push stuff into view state, round trip it in a secure fashion so that we know that the page came from the server originally.
Yeah, actually, I remember using view state user key in 2005, 2006. That was doing view state user key. I actually did a whole series of blog posts on it, as I remember, was a really powerful way to make sure that you flip a switch and make things just a little bit more secure because we were doing banking sites.
Right, right.
Okay, cool. So all that stuff will be open source, and that'll all be out of the box, so people can tear it apart, play with it, change it, do whatever they want to with it.
Yeah, that's absolutely the intent. So it'll all be on NuGet. They can pull it into existing projects, and hopefully it's a good example of how to do this stuff as well.
Okay, so the other thing that we both presented on was SignalR, and we're going to be talking about it more and more. SignalR was a weekend project for you and David Fowler.
Yeah.
And now is it going to become more than a weekend project?
It is. So I think you announced not that long ago at one of the conferences you were at, maybe it was Russia, I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, that we're going to pull SignalR in. So it's being promoted from a when we have time in our own time moonlighting project to a fully funded, fully supported sort of subcomponent of the greater ASP.NET ecosystem. And so it's going to be part of, you know, the Microsoft open source web stack runtime, as we like to call it. So we're just in the process of starting that now. So David and I are just figuring out what that means now. We're sort of spinning up a local team in the halls here of Building 18 to start working on that. Mm-hmm. And I've literally have on my desktop open right now sort of the executive review PowerPoint of the SignalR roadmap to version 1, because that's what we have to do now that we're a Microsoft project.
Right, yeah, you need to finish it.
We need to finish it, right? We can't just do this now. So we're now putting together sort of this road to V1, and obviously we'll share this roadmap publicly very, very shortly and get feedback on it. So
how does that work? Is it still going to be on GitHub and under I think it's under Fowler's name, or is this? I mean, how do we get the word out?
Like, so that's an interesting question. So today,
will it be in the box? You know.
Yeah, so today it's a repository on GitHub. It has its own organization. We created the SignalR organization on GitHub, of which David and I are members, and so it has its own repository. And it, you know, it's actually the number 2 watched GitHub C# repository now, which is kind of cool. Like, it's great that we've got that much support on GitHub for a C# repository. I'm just going to check again, because we're trying to get to number 1, but this is one project above us, which is less than 50 watches above us right now. We're at 1612 and it's at 1680 or something like that. So we're sort of chasing up on these guys. So it's there at the moment. I'm not sure if it's going to stay there or not. You know, we have the rest of the open source web stack runtime is on CodePlex. So that's, you know, web API, MVC, web pages, Razor, all those things are on CodePlex. So I'm not sure whether we have to move it there or not. We're still figuring that stuff out. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's source code. As long as it's there and it's Git, then I'm kind of happy. So, you know, beyond that, it'll be a NuGet package. It'll probably be included in some future WebStack runtime release, whatever that looks like. But our goal is to get a version 1 of SignalR out by the end of the year.
That's cool. How do you think we should tell people about it? Like, if we get it into the templates by updating the templates afterwards, file new SignalR application.
Right, right. Yeah,
so I
think we should definitely have item templates so that you could, in any ASP.NET project, say, add, you know, a SignalR hub or a SignalR connection. And you could get that. It would use NuGet to pull in SignalR if you didn't have it already. A project template is an interesting idea. I'm not sure that SignalR is a good fit for like a brand new project. I think part of the One ASP.NET thing is we really want to encourage people this, you know, this Lego, you know, sort of mindset where they can start an ASP.NET application. And then, hey, I want some real time. Hey, I want an HTTP API. Hey, I want some dynamic data scaffolded stuff. And just choose what they want either at the beginning of the project or at any time in the future of the project. And so I think actually as we move forward, we're going to see a de-emphasis on this idea of file new web API project, file new MVC project, file new dynamic data project. It'll just be file new ASP.NET project. Mm-hmm. And then you choose what type of things do you need in your application. And as I said, not just up front, but also any time in the future.
How much thought is being put into what this one ASP.NET will look like? Now I'm kind of asking loaded questions because I'm involved in it and I know it. But
of course.
You know, OneASP.NET for me means saying file new project and having it not be a series of choices that are scary.
Right.
You know, it should be, I want an ASP.NET project. No matter what kind of project you're going to make, it's going to start out as an ASP.NET project. Mm-hmm. And then I want to be able to say, I'd like this and I'd like this and I'd like this. And like for the example that you're giving about OpenAuth, you know, the first thing I said was, how do I add that to my existing application?
Yes.
You know, and that's not an easy answer today.
Right.
But with well-organized NuGet packages, that know about other NuGet packages. You know, things can plug in. We've shown people some stuff like some prototypes where I could start with an empty application, file new empty, and bring in an MVC starter, a web form starter, a web page starter that all talk to the same model. They all kind of imagine a dependency tree where, you know, Microsoft.ASP.NET.WebForms.sample depends on a model sample, like a stock ticker or something. Mm-hmm. And if we all use the same stock ticker in writing that sample, we could bring in all sorts of ridiculous combinatorics, and it would all just work out of the box.
Yeah. And the thing I love about that approach is it really sort of levels the playing field as such between the three sort of higher end frameworks that we have in ASP.NET, and it reduces this argument of oh it's a web forms project or it's an MVC project to it's an ASP.NET project. And if you want to have some parts of your app using web forms because it's particularly good at doing certain types of UI versus I want this part to be web API or this part to be MVC, you absolutely can do that. Now today we haven't done the best job. This is more than just a philosophy. You know, it's part philosophy and messaging, and it's also part driving how we do features and how we do tooling. What we haven't done particularly well today is setting up the tooling experience and the development experience in general to these type of heterogeneous sort of hybrid applications, which mm-hmm. in reality are all applications. You know, I doubt there is any application out there in reality where it is strictly a web forms application that has only ever had stuff dragged and dropped onto the surface and, you know, stuff in the property grid set. You know, everybody has to pull in other libraries and tweak various things and, you know, hand write custom parts of the application to make it do what you do. I mean, software is complicated. We can never make it completely easy, but we can, I think you said this, but we can smooth over those edges as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the goal. So, I mean, I'm hoping that there will be additional improvements because we're going to be able to ship stuff post RTM. And that's really an important point.
That's a big change too. I mean, that's something that I'm really looking forward to in terms of what we can do as a team, because, you know, previously it's been we have the .NET framework and we have Visual Studio, and those were our ship vehicles. Mm-hmm. And then with the advent of MVC, we kind of broke from the pack and said, well, we'd really like to be able to iterate more frequently. And now that mentality is sort of falling back to everything else we do. So as you said, from Visual Studio 2012, when it RTMs, a lot of the stuff that we have in Visual Studio, you know, including the core tooling, the project systems and the editors and those type of things, are now updatable out of band. So we can release new versions of the templates. We can release new wizards. We can release new designers and various other aspects of tooling, which is going to really free us up to add value on a continuing basis.
What all has been pulled out? Like, what has been externalized?
That's a really good question. The really big thing is if you have Visual Studio 2012 installed, you can go to the extension manager, and you'll see an entry called Web Tooling Extensions, I think it is. Or let me have a look right here. I think it's if you go into Tools and then go to Extensions and Updates, and you look at what's installed, there is something called Web Tooling Extensions. And that includes things like Page Inspector, so the new sort of IE hosted inside Visual Studio that gives you the amazing sort of debugging of your HTML capability is called Page Inspector. That's in there. All of the web forms templates are in the web tooling extensions. We can also deliver extensions to the editor. So we can improve the HTML, CSS, and JavaScript editors out of band because of the pluggability of the Visual Studio editor system. Even project system stuff. So the MVC tooling itself, we get new context menus, we get new wizards, we get the MVC scaffolding dialogue, which lets you create new controllers and views. That is all updatable out of band as well. For instance, we've actually just started this week work on the web form scaffolding. This is something we've been wanting to do for a very long time. And so we're starting work on that now. So the idea is you'll be able to say in an ASP.NET project, right mouse click, add new item, and then in the new item template list, there'd be a scaffolded web form. Mm-hmm. And you click on that, give it a name, hit OK, and then another dialog would show, which will be very similar to the MVC add controller dialog, where you can say, well, I want to scaffold a web form based on this entity framework context and using model binding, and it'll scaffold all that out for you.
I remember that I saw a prototype of that, and I talked about prototypes of web form scaffolding a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Why do, I mean, and I say that kind of like I'm torpedoing you a little bit, because I'm like a huge advocate of that, and I've been trying to get web form scaffolding to happen. I know you love web forms, so you want to get that as well. Why do things like that, you know, get postponed?
We're not a big team. At the end of the day, we only have literally a handful of developers working on certain features. The MVC team is small, the Web API team is small, the Web Forms team is small, the Core ASP.NET runtime team is small. And so we've been part, you know, obviously our major focus for the last 2 years has, since we shipped Visual Studio 2010 and .NET 4, has been .NET 4.5. Mm. And so we've been really busy doing .NET 4.5. And as part of the planning of that, it was like, well, this is what we're going to do for web forms. We want to do model binding. We want to do unobtrusive validation. We want to do async. We'd really like to do these other things, but, you know, these could be done out of band. These don't require updates to .NET 4.5. So we actually, when we did the planning up exercise, we said, what absolutely has to be done in the box? What can't we possibly do out of band? So, and we separated the out of band potential items, and we said, let's put those in a backlog. We'll get to those once we've finished doing .NET 4.5. So we fixed we did the work that we absolutely had to do in band, because they require updates to parts of the system that we can't ship unless we ship a new version of .NET. And now that that work is finished or is winding up, we're moving on to the stuff that we can do out of band.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Because one of the things that I said at in Phoenix was that, you know, the internet is moving really, really fast. And if you try to get something right and you only have this one window within 18 months to do it, you're probably going to get it wrong, and then it's going to sit around for 18 months. So we're trying to get the core stuff correct and then set up a system by which we can deliver updates on a regular basis, because, you know, Visual Studio 2012 might not be updated for a year or two. Mm-hmm. But the web is going to have all sorts of fun and interesting things happening. You know, real time is just one as an example.
Yeah, for sure.
So we can change the templates. We can change new libraries. The other thing that I think is cool about NuGet, and I'm interested in your opinion as an open source person, is that do you think that we're setting people up where open source projects in NuGet aren't necessarily, competing, but we're trying to level the playing field a little bit. So when someone's, you know, in the past people have said, oh, Microsoft just killed my open source project. I would like to set up the system such that Microsoft just made an opportunity for my open source project.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
like bundling, for example, right? Like you could declare your bundling tool dead.
Yes.
Or you could plug your bundling stuff into the framework directly now.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I think at the end of the day, open source in .NET is still in its infancy. If you look at sort of its mind share amongst the greater .NET community, I mean, there are millions of .NET developers literally, and we know a lot of those haven't had great exposure to sort of using and incorporating open source software into their products yet. You know, we know there are still companies out there that flatly refuse to use open source libraries in their projects. So I look at it as part of a way that when Microsoft starts doing open source, it makes open source better for everybody. And so sure, as we do that, there are going to be cases where perhaps we release an open source library that has some overlap with an existing library that was in the field, but there are going to be a lot of times where if we hadn't have done that, there would be a large portion of customers that perhaps would never have even considered the other sort of open source versions. So I think part of that leveling the playing field isn't just about us competing with open source libraries. It's about raising the perception of what open source software is to customers who previously wouldn't have even considered open source. And then in doing that, hopefully make it easier for other open source libraries to get used by that class of customer.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, but do you think that if the open source people aren't digging some of the things that we're doing, mm-hmm. should we even try to get them to love us? You know what I mean? Like we're not Ruby, and we're not, We aren't these other things. Mm-hmm. We should develop our own culture.
Yes, I think so. I mean, well, we have traditional strengths, which are perhaps different to the strengths of these other ecosystems. And I think we can, the ecosystems can learn from each other. I mean, you know, there are things, and we've certainly done that. That's why the shape of .NET has changed somewhat in the last few years. But I don't think we should, that should just result in a massive pendulum swing from what we've been really strong at traditionally to some completely new model that perhaps has the risk of alienating our, you know, our existing strong customer base. I think we need to find that way of making sure that we stay relevant to our existing customers and continue to deliver value to them while also, you know, perhaps loosening up in other areas, in want of a better term, but becoming more attractive, so that people who are making that choice about what platform or what ecosystem they want to sort of onboard onto, are attracted to what we're doing because of, you know, perhaps reasons that we're not traditionally associated with. While maintaining all those, you know, those strengths that we traditionally had. Now that's not an easy thing to do sometimes. But I'm an advocate internally. I'm sort of, the last thing I want us to do is get to a point where in 5 or 10 years we turn around and then realize we don't have all those people following us that we thought we did. The last thing we want to do is become irrelevant because we think that what we have is so strong and we're so strong in our existing customer base that we don't need to change.
Yeah,
exactly. We always need to be, you know, aware of, you know, changing trends and even driving new trends when we have to.
Very cool. I'm glad. I think things are working out. I mean, I think things are starting to happen. I feel, at least from the web team, I'm not speaking about Microsoft, the larger Microsoft, but for us, I think we're starting to execute in a way that is making me happy. I think that the Lego stories and the open source focus, and, you know, with Azure and with Git everywhere now, I think that we're going to do some damage in the best possible way.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I really think that the philosophy behind one ASP.NET is positive all across. I think no one loses in that. So
very cool. Well, thanks for chatting with me.
Not a problem. Love to talk to you all the time.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.